Montreal. No boundaries. Feel alive.
Let you go. I have to get my Lake Magog vaccine.
Your Lake Magog vaccine?
Yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to having the whole family to the cottage for my annual cookout.
Smart move. I'm gonna ask for the Montreal vaccine. I miss those last-minute get-togethers with my buddies.
Nice. Well, I gotta run. I don't think it protects against lateness.
Each vaccination brings us closer to these moments. Follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
From Turtle Island to Palestine, occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine! You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome everyone, you are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Stay tuned.
Israel's deadly assault on Gaza has entered its second week. On Sunday, Israel killed at least 42 Palestinians in Gaza in the deadliest day so far, as Israel bombarded the besieged area with airstrikes, artillery fire, and gunboat shelling. Over the past week, Israel's killed nearly 200 Palestinians, including 58 children and 34 women. Israel has also destroyed over 500 homes in Gaza, leaving 40,000 Palestinians homeless in Gaza. Meanwhile, Israeli security forces and Jewish settlers killed at least 11 Palestinians in the West Bank Friday, in the deadliest day there since 2002. This comes as Hamas is continuing to fire rockets into Israel, where the death toll has reached 11, including two children. One Israeli airstrike on a Gaza refugee camp killed 10 members of the same extended family, including eight children. Israel's also leveled a 12-story building housing the offices of the Associated Press, Al Jazeera, and other media outlets on Saturday. Israel justified the bombing by claiming Hamas is using the building, but offered no proof. Earlier today, U.S. Secretary of State Tony Blinken said he has not seen any Israeli evidence of Hamas operating in that building. The head of Al Jazeera called the attack a blatant violation of human rights and a war crime. Israeli strikes also damaged at least three hospitals in Gaza, as well as a clinic run by Doctors Without Borders. A number of doctors have also been killed in the Israeli airstrikes, including Dr. Ayman Abu Alouf. He headed the coronavirus response at Shifa Hospital, Gaza's largest hospital. He and two of his teenage children died in an Israeli airstrike on their home. Another prominent doctor from the Shifa Hospital, the neurologist Muin Ahmad Al-Alul, was also killed in an airstrike on his home. The Palestinian Center for Human Rights said the Israeli airstrikes have erased entire residential neighborhoods and left earthquake-like destruction. On the diplomatic front, President Biden is facing growing criticism for refusing to call on Israel to halt its assault on Gaza. At the United Nations, the United States blocked the Security Council for the third time in a week from issuing a statement calling for a ceasefire following a virtual UN Security Council meeting on Sunday. Meanwhile, massive protests against the Israeli assault took place across the globe over the weekend, including Chicago, New York, Washington, London, Paris, Madrid, Doha, and Baghdad. We begin today's show in Gaza, where we're joined by Rafat Alarir, Palestinian academic and activist who's the editor of the book Gaza Writes Back and the co-editor of Gaza Unsilenced. Rafat Alarir, can you describe the situation on the ground right now in Gaza?
Thank you, Amy. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Democracy Now! You've just mentioned that this is an earthquake-level kind of destruction, reminiscent of the tsunami that happened in Japan almost a decade ago, and gives us sparks of the blitz in the 40s. Now, what Israel is doing is total devastation and destruction to Palestinian homes, Palestinian infrastructure, the roads, the access to water, sewage. Today, Israel started a new chapter by targeting Palestinian economy. So many businesses. So many factories have been destroyed and damaged. In addition to that, you mentioned that Israeli attacks on clinics, also especially those providing COVID-19 services and vaccinations, when Gaza is plagued by COVID-19. Israel is also damaging and targeting Palestinian schools. So this is a total destruction from the Israeli occupation against the native Palestinians in Gaza.
Can you describe what the past hours, the days have been like for your family, Rafat? And we are speaking to you on the phone versus through video Skype. You are having a lot of trouble with electricity.
Exactly. Israel is preventing the fuel to get to the solar power plant in Gaza, and also targeting facilities that, which means that we will have less electricity. We have very slow internet connection now because Israel wants a total blackout. The most important thing that could summarize this is that every single night here in Gaza, we say this is the worst night of our lives. And every night Israel proves us wrong because it comes with more monstrosity, it comes with more bombardment, more missiles raining on Palestinian heads. Last night was a horrific night that Israel also chooses the timing when kids are asleep or about to sleep or have just slept and starts the bombardment campaign in order to maximize the damage, maximize the trauma, and maximize the terror. You mentioned the two nights ago, Israel leveled a whole neighborhood, destroying blocks of people, of homes. People, whole families were massacred. Al-Kolak family had almost 20 family members massacred by Israeli warplanes as they slept, as they huddled in the safety of their homes.
You wrote an op-ed piece for the New York Times. My child asks, can Israel destroy our building if the power is out? Talk more about, you have six children?
Yeah, I do, yeah. The thing is that again, what makes this far worse than anything is that this is not new. This is a continuation of Israeli aggression against Palestinians that started in 1948, the Nakba you just mentioned. Israel is particularly trying to destroy our young generation, especially the children. Out of the 200 people Israel massacred in 6 days, 60 are children, almost 40 are women, about 20 are elderly people. So this is an open war against the vulnerable, the sick. The kids are suffering the most. A friend of mine told me the other day that the worst case scenario for us is to survive this brutal war by Israel, because the trauma, especially with the kids, is not going to be an easy thing to deal with. Is not going to be something that can fix by just Israel ending this aggression. There has to be a radical solution to end the aggression and the brutal Israeli racist apartheid regime.
You write that your daughter, who is 8 years old, or in Gazan time, 2 wars old, asked sheepishly if, quote, they could still destroy a building now that the power was out. Can you talk more about how your children, you're keeping your children safe, what it means to go outside, Rafat?
We never go outside. I just went outside with my son to run some errands, and it's very dangerous. We took our COVID masks off because we didn't want to be targeted for people trying to hide. I asked my son, I told him, Omar, do you want to walk together or far away from each other? He looked at me and said, what difference does it make? Because he knows when Israel throws these bombs, it destroys. So the kids cannot go out. They are always huddled in. We try to keep them in the safest place in the home, but there is no safety when Israel throws bombs that are five or six or seven tons on the same building. The kids are horrified. They wake up shrieking. They wake up crying, and they're shaking. Even when the door slams, the kids would fidget and think that this is some kind of Israeli bomb nearby. The trauma is unprecedented. It will never go away. I hope it will go away. But with the kids, we try to keep them close to us. We tell them stories. Something new I saw from my two little daughters, Lena and Amal, is that they started building houses. Usually they play dolls. The past 2 nights, they used their dolls and cubes to build high-rising buildings and homes. And this is really heartbreaking, because it seems that they are aware that Israel is destroying homes, and these very children are trying to build even with toys. And finally, when it comes to this, I want to emphasize a point. Israel has trying to destroy the Palestinian children, Palestinian youth, for decades and decades. In the first Intifada, 10 years ago, 30 years ago, 60 years ago. But every time the next generation grows fiercer and more determined to be free, more determined to be part of the global struggle for freedom, because Israel is a racist colonial regime that is bombing, besieging, and destroying native people who have very little means to resist.
On Saturday, President Biden spoke with both the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, and the Palestinian National Authority President, Mahmoud Abbas. According to the White House, in his conversation with Netanyahu, Biden, quote, reaffirmed his strong support for Israel's right to defend itself against rocket attacks from Hamas and other terrorist groups in Gaza, unquote. But then you have progressive Democrats like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is saying apartheid states are not democracies. Rafat El-Arir, what do you say to President Biden?
I think it was Biden that gave Netanyahu the green light to start this. When they tweeted that America supports Israel's right to defend itself, 2 days after the aggression started, I quickly said that this is going to be a long war against civilians, because Israel is killing us using American weapons, using American technology, using American planes, America has, the American administration, all American administrations have blood, Palestinian blood on their hands. The massacre that is going on is on Biden. And it's very shame to see people like Adam Schiff and those people who were fierce rivals to Trump and his barbarity say things like Israel has the right to defend itself. There is no moral equivalence here. Israel is an occupying power. The aggressor and Palestinians are the oppressed native people defending themselves with what little means they have. But sadly, it seems that both the Democrats and the Republicans unite fiercely to enable Israel, to empower Israel, because both countries were born in genocide and continue to ethnically cleanse natives and oppress them. As for AOC, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and other amazing Black caucus and the wonderful solidarity in America with Jewish Voice for Peace, indigenous peoples, and Black Lives Matter activists. This shows how this Israel's lies and fabrications are no longer dominant. People stopped fearing Israel. They now can see that Israel is brutal, that Israel is apartheid, and this amazing and wonderful solidarity with the Palestinian struggle is something that means a lot to us. We learn from these people, and we are part of this global struggle, and we hope this is going to increase more and more to create real pressure to stop America from arming Israel, empowering Israel to kill Palestinians.
Rafat Alarir, please stay safe. Palestinian academic and activist, we hear your children in the background, editor of the book Gaza Writes Back and co-editor of Gaza Unsilenced.
Biden, Biden, you will see!
Biden, Biden, you will see!
Palestine will be free!
Palestine will be free!
Palestine will be free!
Palestine will be free!
On May 15, thousands of Montrealers took to the street to express their anger at the current crimes the Israeli apartheid regime is committing against Palestinians once again. These protests were only one of the hundreds of protests that took place around the globe, where many cities saw its citizens take to the street to express their anger at the current violence directed at Palestinians by the Israeli occupation, and to express their solidarity with Palestinians in this new wave of violence against them. You can hear right now some of the chants that I managed to record this Saturday during the protests that took place here in Montreal.
The people united will never be defeated! The people united will never be defeated!
In the morning, a car parade was organized where dozens of cars drove throughout the streets of Montreal to spread their message of solidarity with Palestinians. This car parade was planned in advance to commemorate Nakba Day. As you know, it falls on May 15. But the current escalation by the Israeli occupation government in Palestine was a reminder that the Nakba is still ongoing, and this car parade became a commemoration of the Nakba, but also a protest of the ongoing Nakba that is happening today. This latest escalation started with the tensions rising in the small neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah in East Jerusalem. The current Israeli apartheid authorities are trying to ethnically cleanse the neighborhood and evict Palestinian families out of their homes to replace them with settlers. Next, I will play a clip that briefly explains the history and the situation in Sheikh Jarrah.
Yaakov, you know this is not your house.
Yes, but if I go, you don't go back. So what's the problem? Why are you yelling at me? I didn't do this.
But you're
easy to yell at me, but I didn't do this.
Yeah, you are stealing my house.
And if I don't steal it, someone else is going
to
steal it.
No one is allowed to steal it, Yaammi.
In the past week, the neighborhood Sheikh Jarrah has made headlines as the latest flashpoint in Israel's ongoing occupation of Palestinian territories. So what's the story of this neighborhood? Following the Nakba, or catastrophe, where hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were violently displaced by Zionist militias in 1948, a number of Palestinian families relocated to Sheikh Jarrah as refugees. At the time, East Jerusalem was under the administration of the then Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. Decades later, Jordan was due to hand full ownership of these homes and land to Palestinians, but Israel occupied East Jerusalem during the 1967 war. Since then, Palestinians in Sheikh Jarrah have been subject to ongoing violence and legal threats from Israeli settlers who claim their homes and seek to evict them. Israeli law works in favor of settlers by allowing Jews to claim property based on claims predating 1948, while denying Palestinians the same legal rights. Israeli courts sometimes offer displaced Palestinians the chance to pay rent as so-called protected tenants under the Israelis who are given their former houses, a proposal Palestinians understandably reject, as it means paying rent to people who have stolen their very homes. 43 Palestinians were forced out of Sheikh Jarrah in 2002, and more families in 2008 and 2017. Since the beginning of 2020, Israeli courts have ordered the eviction of 13 Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah, despite living there for generations. On Saturday, an Israeli court delayed a scheduled hearing on a Palestinian appeal amid heightened tensions. The appeal ruling could determine whether four Palestinian families could be forcibly evicted from the neighborhood. The delay was considered a momentary victory. The ongoing solidarity protests with the families facing eviction in Sheikh Jarrah led to last week's Israeli incursions into the Al-Aqsa compound in the final week of Ramadan. For many, this is no coincidence, but rather direct provocation as retribution by Israeli authorities for the eviction protests. Since the attacks on Al-Aqsa, Israel has also launched deadly attacks on the Gaza Strip.
As mentioned in the clip, the protests around the ethnic cleansing of Sheikh Jarrah led to the eventual attack on the Al-Aqsa Mosque by the Israeli authorities. Next, I will play an interview with a Palestinian journalist who will be talking about how the events in Al-Aqsa Mosque led to protests spread out throughout the West Bank. She will also talk about the Palestinian authorities, what are they doing, and how the protesters view them.
Welcome to the Mondo Weiss Podcast. Last Friday, Israeli forces stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem's Old City. Mondo Weiss's Palestine correspondent Yumna Patel reported that, quote, the height of the violence took place inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, where tens of thousands of Palestinian worshippers had gathered inside the mosque and the surrounding courtyard for evening prayers on the last Friday of Ramadan. Video footage from the scene shows people in prayer when armed Israeli forces stormed the compound, firing sound bombs, tear gas, and rubber bullets at worshippers. By Monday, events had escalated. Hamas issued an ultimatum to Israel: withdraw from Al-Aqsa and the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood by 6 p.m. and release all the Palestinians detained by police during the recent tensions in Jerusalem, or there would be retaliation. Shortly after 6 p.m., Hamas launched several barrages of rockets from Gaza, targeting Jerusalem and other cities farther inside Israeli territory than in past rounds of violence. The Israeli reaction has been brutal. Airstrikes and land-based attacks on Gaza are still ongoing as we record this episode. High-rise apartment and office buildings are being specifically targeted, leaving hundreds of people homeless and destroying the offices of many regional and international media outlets. We spoke with Yumna today for a brief update. Yumna, can you give us an update on what you've been seeing over the last 24 hours?
So things, I mean, the situation is developing super rapidly across Palestine. Currently in the occupied West Bank, protests have spread in almost every district from the southern West Bank to the northern West Bank. These protests are ongoing as we speak. A short while ago, I was covering one of the protests in the city of Bethlehem. Something distinctive that's happening right now is Israeli forces are extensively using live fire in these protests. At least six Palestinian protesters have been killed just in the past couple of hours in protests across the West Bank. There are dozens of injuries. The Palestinian Ministry of Health is reporting currently 91 injuries, but those are only ones that are being treated in health centers across the territory. And they're saying that most of the injuries they're seeing are the result of live ammunition. So things are definitely escalating. The protests don't seem like they're going to be stopping. Things are continuing to develop in the West Bank now, where we're seeing these protests. And in Gaza, Israel is continuing to bombard Gaza with airstrikes and demonstrations, and protests are continuing across Palestinian communities inside East Jerusalem and inside Israel as well.
There are protests and confrontations with Israeli forces happening in the West Bank, Jerusalem, and in some cities inside Israeli territory. Is there any organization to them yet, or are they spontaneously developing out of these local communities?
So the thing that Palestinians are pointing out about what the current moment that we're in and sort of the defining character that is distinguishing this moment and these uprisings and these protests that we're seeing from, similar situations in the past is that this is very much a grassroots-led movement that started in the streets. It's being led by Palestinian youth. It's being led by civil society. It's being led just by ordinary people in the streets going out, protesting, standing up, and voicing their opposition to, Israeli apartheid and the regime that has oppressed them and suffocated them for decades. And the thing that is different this time around that, Palestinians have expressed to me and that Palestinians are expressing all across social media is that this is a movement being led by the youth. The Palestinian leadership or so-called leadership has no role in this. Whereas in the past, different Palestinian political factions and Palestinian leaders and leaders within the Palestinian Authority would call for, collective, for example, days of rage or protest against the U.S. decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. But this time it's very much being led by the streets. It's happening in the streets. It's a grassroots movement, and Palestinian youth are actively fighting against any efforts of the Palestinian leadership to attempt to sort of co-opt this movement.
What is the Palestinian Authority leadership doing right now?
I guess short answer, nothing. I mean, aside from, sort of empty statements and words of support, from Abbas saying that, he supports the Palestinian people and stands with the Palestinian people and et cetera, X, Y, Z, in terms of actual sort of movement and, stuff on the ground. I think the PA has been sidelined and they've also, they've been sidelined and they've also sort of haven't taken any concrete action in regards to the current movement. There's been a lot of jokes about, just sort of Abbas sort of hiding out in his compound and sort of not really showing his face because he doesn't have anything to say, for the Palestinian people. Something that's really important to note in a lot of these protests, a large feature of the protests, not just in the West Bank, in cities like Haifa as well, that are inside Israel, Palestinian youth have been vocalizing their frustration with the Palestinian Authority and with Mahmoud Abbas and his regime So these protests aren't just directed at, you know, the Israeli apartheid regime and the Israeli occupation. These are also directed at the so-called Palestinian leaders as well. In one of the protests this morning in Bethlehem, there were hundreds of youth marching through the streets, calling Abbas a coward and a collaborator and a traitor, saying that they're going to, you know, quote unquote, step on his head. And just throwing insults at the Palestinian Authority, saying that, you know, their government are a bunch of traitors. So that's the feeling amongst Palestinian youth. And I think it's one that's being felt all across the board towards their leaders.
Yumna, thanks so much for the update. Please stay safe.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This latest escalation of the violence against Palestinians in Palestine, Israel, is happening at the same time of a political crisis inside Israel. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, has been in the middle of a list of scandals and corruption accusations for many years. After the latest Israeli election, Benjamin Netanyahu did not succeed in forming government. Many are speculating that this latest escalation toward a massive attack against Gaza is done by Benjamin Netanyahu for his own political interest. Next, I will play an interview with an Israeli journalist who will talk about who might benefit politically inside Israel from these latest escalation.
We're joined now by longtime Israeli journalist Amira Haas, correspondent for Haaretz in the occupied Palestinian territories. She's the only Israeli Jewish journalist to have spent over 25 years living in and reporting from Gaza and the West Bank. Her latest piece is headlined, Gaza Lives Erased, Israel's Wiping Out Entire Palestinian Families on Purpose. Amira Haas, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you talk about how this conflict serves Netanyahu, who's on trial for corruption, could not form even a coalition government, keeps him in power, that it's in his interest, as he says, to continue the bombing into the future?
Certainly for Netanyahu and for the right wing in general, the war, and usually wars, I think, benefit the right wing and benefit the oppressors. Of course, it completely erased the possibility that a different government will be formed here. It brought closer together the different right-wing factions that before maybe had some disagreement because of Netanyahu. Some people, some Israeli journalists say that it was all calculated on the part of Netanyahu. I doubt it, because the Israeli policies in Jerusalem during the Ramadan, the repressive policies, are all in the same logic that has been practiced here for so long, which is to dislocate them forcibly, and not only in Sheikh Jarrah. We hear about Sheikh Jarrah, but so many Palestinian communities in the West Bank are in danger of being dislocated by Israeli authorities and have been dislocated forcibly. So, yes, but it has benefited so far the Israeli right wing. Israeli right wing settlers, I mean, they're all right wing, but settlers from the West Bank are joining the forces inside 48, inside Israel, and intimidate Palestinians and Palestinian citizens of Israel, and instigate clashes and attack them. Some Palestinian groups have also expressed their anger in different ways, including vandalism, but for different reasons, because they had to express their anger about Israeli policies and Israeli repression. So far, it has benefited Netanyahu. We don't know how it will be in the longer run, but I care less about Netanyahu as I care about strengthening of the Israeli chauvinistic and what I would say the forces in Israel that advocate, how would they say, the repetition of the Nakba, the repetition of A48, expulsion, who take this as an opportunity to promote these policies of ethnic cleansing. This is more worrying. And so far, it seems that this is what is happening. It's not that the Israelis learned a lesson of fear and of having their life disrupted and say, okay, let's find a political way to get out of it. It seems to me,
Amira,
from Ramallah, not totally.
But I wanted to ask you precisely about this issue is what we're seeing here is clearly in terms of within Israel itself, of the Palestinian communities within Israel, for the first time really expressing clear actions and solidarity with the rest of the Palestinian people. You don't have a sense that this is making the regular Israeli population feel that it is untenable to continue this oppression of the Palestinians in general, that it will, in the long term, Israel cannot be victorious in this?
I want to believe, but so far from, maybe it's too early, but so far when I listen to the news, and I must say that I listen very little to Israeli news because it can drive you mad how one-sided and blind it is. But from the little that I understand, that I read and I see, people still do not connect the dots. They do not connect it to 48 and they to 1948. They do not connect it to the ongoing settler colonialism in the West Bank mostly. They do not connect it to the fact that Gaza has been under blockade and siege and closure, not just for the last 14 years, as people say, but since actually the beginning of the 1990s, Israel placed Gaza under a regime of very strict restrictions on movement. So still, I don't see that this awareness is strong enough. There must be something much stronger, like an international intervention, political intervention, an economical intervention, into brings more sense to the Israeli mind. That's my impression now, and I really hope I'm wrong. I really hope that once this is over, Israelis will understand that this is untenable, that the repression regime is untenable. But right now, the attitude is that Israel is being attacked, not vice versa. This is the main message that I receive from the little that I know, I must say, because I'm here in the West Bank.
I want to thank you so much for being with us, Haaretz correspondent.
While the Israeli apartheid government is busy ethnically cleansing Jerusalem and bombing Gaza, the pandemic is still ongoing. Recent bombing by the Israeli military is increasingly showing signs that the Israeli government is intentionally targeting the healthcare system in Gaza that is already near collapse.
When we are still fighting the COVID-19 crisis, we were just seeing the beginning of the end of the second wave. We should also remember that we, just before Corona started a year plus ago, we were coming out of 2 years of great marches of return, which had a devastating human impact. There were more than 35,000 people injured at the fence, as they call it here, more than 200 killed, again, including 13 UNRWA school children due to disproportionate reaction from the Israeli side. And I'm mentioning this because the health system was already struggling and basically on its knees. We were very worried that COVID would be the cause of the health system falling apart. It barely coped. And now this on top of it. So this war, if it continues any longer, has the risk of having a very decimating, devastating impact on healthcare, on its people, in terms of the doctors and nurses, and on the healthcare infrastructure.
This was Matthias Schmale, director of UNRWA's operations in Gaza. UNRWA stands for the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East. Next, we will hear from a doctor from Gaza talking about this latest round of violence and its impact on the healthcare system in Gaza, where right now many doctors have been killed by the Israeli military, hospitals have been targeted, streets leading to hospitals have been targeted, and even a testing center for COVID-19 has been also impacted.
Israel's also facing increasing criticism for targeting doctors and health clinics. On Monday, an Israeli strike damaged the only COVID-19 laboratory in Gaza. On Sunday, a massive Israeli airstrike killed Dr. Ayman Abu Alouf, who headed the coronavirus response at Shifa Hospital, Gaza's largest hospital. He and two of his teenage children died in an Israeli bombing of the residential area of Gaza City that killed a total of 30 people. Another prominent doctor from Shifa Hospital, Muin Ahmad Alalou, one of the only neurologists in Gaza, was killed in an airstrike on his home. Israel's also bombed many of the roads leading to Shifa Hospital, making it harder for ambulances to bring patients. According to the World Health Organization, Israeli strikes and shelling have damaged at least 18 hospitals and clinics. In Gaza, we're joined by Dr. Rasha. To protect her safety, Dr. Rasha has asked we only use her first name and not show her face. Dr. Rasha, let's begin with you. You are at Ground Zero in Gaza. You knew the doctors who were killed. Can you start off by describing the situation on the ground?
Yes. Hello, and thank you for allowing me to speak about how we live these days in Gaza. I would like to express the humanitarian aspects of this work as a physician and as a Palestinian and as a mother at the start. First of all, you can imagine that there is no place safe in Gaza now. If you imagine that you are walking in a city and there is no single part in the city is not targeted, the buildings, the residential buildings, the healthcare facilities, even the street itself, walking people on bike, on motorbike, in their car, and mosque, even the beach, the restaurant, the police office. Whatever you can see by your eye while you are walking in any city has been targeted. And this is actually, it's awful, and it makes even paralysis for the movement, for the ambulance, which are going to the hospital. The entry to the Shifa Hospital, the main hospital in Gaza, has been all the road leading to the hospital has been destroyed, and which make the ambulance need to make a long turn before they reach the hospital with injured patients. Even the electricity station, which has been targeted in 2008, has been targeted again, and now we have no electricity. This way it has been targeted again, and there is no electricity coming only 2 to 3 hours per day, and we are not anticipating when it's coming. We are using generator, and even there is no fuel enough to supply the generator, and now I have no electricity and no electricity from the generator as well for me personally. The internet tower has been targeted, and we have very, very access to internet. Even this, I think this is to target speaking out and to prevent us from talking and exhibit the situation. The schools, the kindergarten, the factories, the governmental building, the banks, the ministry building, primary healthcare facilities, including, as you mentioned, the Doctors Without Borders clinics and office has been targeted, as the Anatef spokesperson has said 2 days ago. The residential home, which is the main catastrophe and the main disaster, is that the residential building and towers has been targeted. It has been destroyed over the people who are living inside. And as you mentioned, two doctors have been killed, including one of them was my mentor, Dr. Ayman Abu Al-Awf. It was actually a nightmare. And when he was targeted, I remember the night very well. He was following the news, and we know where he is living. He lives close to Al-Shifa Hospital. And we used to say that Dr. Ayman is living in the hospital, actually, because whenever you go to the hospital, you find him. If he has a critical case, he just go home and come back to the hospital every time to check his cases. He is a very committed person, and he was my teacher. He was a member of the COVID committee. He was training the board resident doctor and the internship and medical school doctor. His loss is really a big loss to the medical staff in Gaza. Really, I cannot imagine that he has been killed, and I think it's a nightmare, not more, and I hope I will see him soon. I cannot imagine, actually. I remember that night we were following the news about 3 nights ago, and I sleep late at around 4 a.m., and my husband wake me at 7 or eight, and he told me, you know, Dr. Ayman, yes, Ayman Abulov, I told him, don't say that, because I was anticipating, but I hope it will not okay. And he said, yes, he has been killed. And his children and his wife, his father and his mother are still under rebels, and they did not manage to get them early in the morning. Me and all my colleagues at WhatsApp group, we are reassuring each other, he's killed, but his children, there was no news about whether they are still alive under the rebels or not, because there is some stories, some people survive, rarely people survive, and we was hoping that anyone of his family survived. Unfortunately, by the midday, we know that no one from his family survived, and it was a huge loss to humanity and to the medical field in Gaza. Also, another doctor, Ayman Al-Alul, who is a pulmonologist in Ashifa Hospital, has been killed in the same strike. It's awful, and as you see, they destroy buildings during night while people are sleeping in their homes. There is no alarm, as they claim. They claim that when we are target residential building, we are sending alarm to the people, but this is not the truth. This is not the truth, to be honest, all the time. Most of the time, they are not sending alarms, and as you see in the news, many homes have been destroyed over the people, including a refugee camp beside the beach. It's called Ashate. About 5 days ago, also the same, they target a home with around 12-15 persons from one family has been killed, with only 5 months old child survived. I spent the whole day.
Dr. Rasha, my condolences to you and your colleagues for the death of Dr. Ayman and the terrible destruction. But I wanted to ask you, there were other medical facilities have been hit as well. Doctors Without Borders said that on Sunday there was an Israeli missile struck a clinic that they were running. Is it your sense that the medical facilities are being targeted by the Israelis?
Yeah, I think it's targeted. It's intentionally targeted. Even if they claim that there is something underneath or behind it or surrounding it, it's intentionally targeted. MSF is known that it provides service for pain and for trauma patients. And there was a plan to resume activity for care of the traumatized patients to provide dressing and to care for the injured people during this war. But unfortunately, the biggest clinic for MSF has been targeted and it's virtually damaged. The sterilization unit of the clinic has been damaged. And even the road which going to the clinic has been completely destructed. So I think this is targeted because to increase the overwhelming of the already overwhelmed healthcare system. I'm sure that if this were belong more, the healthcare system will be overwhelmed and the capacity is limited, which is already limited due to 15 years siege on Gaza. So I guess this is intended. As I mentioned, the street leading to the hospital has been targeted for Ashifa Hospital, and the main entry for Al-Aqsa Hospital in the Adel al-Balah, the middle of Gaza, also has been targeted, and one person was killed in front of the hospital during this target. So it makes no sense to target the streets surrounding the hospital, and it's a humanitarian disaster that if you are not only targeting people, but targeting the place where people can be treated, this is another crime that they should be accounted for.
Also, the main clinic responsible for COVID care and the laboratory doing COVID testing were struck. Gaza was already facing a huge problem, as much of the rest of the world, even worse than other parts of the world in terms of the pandemic. How have you been able to manage in this situation?
Actually, before starting of the war, there was almost complete lockdown in Gaza due to increase the pandemic virus in Gaza. There was around 20 to 30 people die every day from COVID, and the hospital and the healthcare system for COVID care was already overwhelmed. My friends and my friends who are working in COVID units in the ICU and in the ward, ICU care ward, already mentioned that there is no capacity and it's overwhelmed, and Gaza was doing the precautions to control the pandemic. However, there is only one lab in Gaza, central lab, which was doing the COVID test, and it was also a store where they store the vaccine and they make plans and meeting to plan for the COVID, and this has been targeted. During the war, because of the restriction more, the number of the cases which diagnosed with COVID decreased, but it's due to decreased people movement and seeking health care in the hospital from the war. But no one knows the actual number of cases with COVID who are not tested, who are afraid from moving from home to do the test. And the deputy prime minister, minister of health, Dr. Yusuf Abdish, said that they are not able to do any COVID tests since yesterday. So it will be double the humanitarian crisis. There will be, in addition to the war, to the victims, the COVID, which could not be diagnosed. Even the vaccination series, which was started in Gaza around 2 to 3 months ago, this would be interrupted. All the COVID, and also a lot of a big member of the COVID committee, like Dr. Ayman, all this will have impact on COVID control committee and COVID control program. And I think that with the upcoming days, we will see a disaster. Health, humanitarian and healthcare disaster, especially also if you add on electricity problem and interruption in the electricity supply to the hospital and the vital place like the ICU sitting, which are dependent for ventilation patients, electricity interruption also has impact on this.
Dr. Rasha, I want to thank you for being with us. Please stay safe. Palestinian internal medicine physician working in Gaza.
The violence of Israeli apartheid is not only in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem or in the blockaded, besieged, occupied Gaza. It's also inside the current state of Israel. News about protests and unrest happening inside Israel has been focusing on the Lid neighborhood. Next, we will hear from a journalist and activist from Lid talking about what is happening in Lid and the significance of this city.
Palestinians across the occupied West Bank, Gaza, and inside Israel are staging a historic general strike. For more, we go to Haifa in Israel to speak with Rami Yunus, Palestinian journalist and activist who's originally from the city of Lid. If you can talk about the significance of this general strike, Rami, and in talking about you being from Lid, the mob violence, the attacks on Palestinians that's taking place right now.
Well, the strike, Amy, is a historical event for the first time since 1936. That's 12 years before the Nakba, the catastrophe of the Palestinian people, or the founding of the State of Israel. For the first time ever, we are striking in all over Palestine, from the river to the sea. So what's happening right now, I mean, everything started a few weeks ago with a popular uprising. You see youth demonstrating everywhere in Palestine, in Jaffa, in Nazareth, in Haifa, in Lid, and in Jerusalem, and in Gaza, all for Jerusalem, all for Sheikh Jarrah. These demonstrations were countered by a lot of police brutality instantly and resulting in the clashes, the violent clashes, that then turned into basically Palestinians defending themselves every night against attacks by Israeli settlers and the Israeli police. Now, let me go into Lid and describing what's happening in Lid. Lid, my hometown, also Hebrew, in Hebrew they call it Lod, was a Palestinian city that was occupied in 1948, right? Nowadays, they call it a mixed city. What happened in that mixed city is that 15 years ago, when they evicted those settlers from Gaza, they moved them into Lid, and these settlers moved into Lid with a very clear and declared goal of Judaizing the city, meaning these Jewish supremacists who were removed from Gaza went into Lid, and mind you, Lid is only 10 minutes from Tel Aviv, 5 minutes from the airport. We're not talking about a city in the West Bank, and started Judaizing the place. They started building their own settlements. They started moving into Palestinian neighborhoods. And we have been seeing a rise in house demolitions for Palestinian people in the past 15 years. The average of houses being demolished a year is somewhere between 10 to 15 houses. Before the settlers moved into Lid, only two or three houses a year got demolished. The demolitions come because 80% of the people who live there, their houses were built without a building permit because the authorities won't issue one, so that they can come later and maybe use it as a political whip to punish the local population. Now, with all this, with all of this tension, with all of this background, Palestinians, especially young people under the age of 20, took to the street and started demonstrating. When they were countered by the brutal force by the Israeli police, and then the Israeli right wingers started attacking them and shooting them on the street, this is when all hell broke loose. Now, Amy, every day I wake up and I reach out for my phone and I pray to God that this is not the morning that I'm going to be seeing a horrifying text message. This is not the morning that I will be receiving the catastrophic news. We are worried. We are very, very worried. And what's even more worrying is that it's not just people. It's not just that these settlers are moving from the... these settlers are openly attacking Palestinians. Is that police is allowing settlers from the West Bank, from places like Yitzhar and Nukdim, you know, people who became professional in burning olive groves, these people are moving into it, coming into it on a daily basis. They roam free at night in the city streets, breaking curfew, while the Israeli police not only allowing them to break curfew while the Palestinians are locked in their homes, but escorting them, and more often than not, attack Palestinians with settlers. And we have tons of evidence to show that, to show for.
And Rami, could you talk about the role of the Israeli media in propagating and legitimizing hateful and violent or Zionist rhetoric?
You know, how the Israeli media and the way they behave these days is a perfect example of how structural violence is maintained and nurtured in Israel. You know, I was in a TV interview last week when it was still demonstrations, before it was basically Palestinians defending themselves against the mobs and the police. I was in an interview on Israeli TV, and then the anchor said that maybe it's time to reload the gun magazines. And we actually, throughout the live broadcast, we counted incitement by him 8 times. He incited 8 times to kill Palestinians on the street. The other day, 2 or 3 days ago, an Israeli journalist, Israel Fry, on Israeli TV, criticized the police, criticized the mayor of Lid, and said that it doesn't make any sense. Why are you allowing settlers to come into Lid from the West Bank? Why are these armed people coming into the city and creating all this unrest? He was immediately silenced by the anchor. So what we're seeing right now, not only incitement, but they're also trying to silence voices that are coming from Israeli journalism, voices who are criticizing the actions of the Israeli government and the Israeli police.
And that's it for today. You will listen to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity radio show on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. And as every week, before I go, I wish you a free, free Palestine. Palestine free from colonization, ethnic cleansing and occupation. And hopefully, Palestine free from our own complicity here in the West with the crimes of apartheid.
Feeling off? Need to stimulate your imagination? From May 28th to June 6th, join the 15th edition of the Off TA, a key festival for young creation in live art. by phone or online. Dozens of shows, micro-performances, and live broadcast activities are offered to you from all over the city. Come celebrate and support bold artists who create in these uncertain times. Get your accessible or supporter passes now to access the entire program. To learn more about this edition, visit offta.com. Vous vous sentez off et avez besoin de faire le plein d'imaginaire? Du 28 mai au 6 juin, prenez part à la 15e édition du OFTA, festival incontournable de la jeune création en art vivant. Par téléphone ou sur le web, des spectacles, des micro-performances et des activités en direct vous sont offerts des quatre coins de la ville. Venez célébrer et soutenir des artistes qui osent créer en ces temps d'incertitude. Procurez-vous dès maintenant nos passes accessibles ou solidaires pour accéder à l'ensemble de la programmation. Pour en savoir plus sur cette édition à distance, consultez le offta.com.
Doesn't matter what you create.